Well, it's good to be in church, isn't it? Always good to be with God's people on Sunday when you and I come together and to be able to worship and sing great songs that lift our hearts and our spirits and remind us of just how great God is. And it's good to have Pastor Titus today. Now, you need to pray for him this week as he starts some chemo, all right? I know you've been praying for him, but redouble those prayers as he goes into chemo and that God will touch him and help him through this thing and get him back on his feet where he wants to be and where I know you want him to be. And we'll follow him all this week with our prayers. I know it never has happened in your house when you had children. Or if you have children, it just doesn't happen around your house. But for some reason, it happened around mine. When my kids were growing up, I had something for them to do, and I would look them right in the eye and tell them to do something and walk away and come back later and ask them, had they done it? No. As though they had never heard me. Now, they learned that from being around layman's children. I want to tell you that. That's how they learned it. But our kids don't always do what we say. Unfortunately, that happens for us as adults sometimes, isn't it? When Jesus tells us, when we know what God wants us to do, when he makes it plain what we ought to do, sometimes we hear, but we don't do. Jesus had the same problem. Matthew chapter 7, he talks about it just for a few minutes. At the end of the Sermon on the Mount, after he had preached that great sermon that had so very, very much in it that speaks to our hearts even today, Jesus had some closing words in the Sermon on the Mount. Matthew chapter 7, beginning in verse 24, these words. Therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise man who built his house on the rock. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house, yet it did not fall because it had its foundation on the rock. But everyone who hears these words of mine and does not put them into practice is like a foolish man who built his house on sand. The rain came down, the stream rose, the wind blew and beat against that house, and it fell with a great crash. When Jesus had finished saying these things, the crowds were amazed at his teachings, because he taught as one who had authority and not as the teachers of the law. Now, what I'd like to do this morning is I want to test your knowledge today of American literature. Now, I mentioned some time ago that before I became a pastor, I taught literature in college. So let me just kind of test your knowledge of American literature, because there's a very famous story in the history of American literature that is similar to the one we just read. In the other story, three characters are builders, and each of them builds a house, and it's a contrast between wise and foolish building. In the other story, each house faces a test, and if the house is wisely built, it stands, but if it's foolishly built, it falls. Anybody want to guess what that other American literature story is? Three Little Pigs. Titus, you have a very literate congregation here today. They must come from the English department of the local school. Well, you know, we learned that as children, Three Little Pigs, you know, and we've had this very serious congregation. You kind of tune in there. And let me remind you that every little pig builds a house. And every little pig faces the big bad wolf. And one day the big bad wolf comes by and says, little pig, let me in. And the little pig says, not by the... Oh, I wanted to see if I could get you to do that, huh? Now, two of those little pigs built their house on junk. Maybe it was because it was easier, maybe because it was cheaper, and maybe they never stopped to ask any questions. Questions like, is this house built for the wolf? Will it stand the wolf test? You know, now one of those little pigs built his house wisely, and the Bible says it stands. There's something about house building, something about the metaphor for our life that runs kind of deep. So Jesus tells this story about house building. It's really, you know, one of two these stories that are two stories side by side. Now, when you get to a parable like that of Jesus and one of his teachings, the best way to understand that is to see where the two stories are alike and where the two stories are different. Because when you find out where the two stories are different, that's the hinge point on which the whole story turns. Then you can find out what Jesus really is after. So let's walk through the story this morning together. The first detail that I would remind us of is this. Every person builds a house. Every person builds a house. That detail does not vary. It is not optional. Now, to really understand that, just replace the word house with the word character, or the word soul, or the word life. Because Jesus is saying to us, you and I are constructing a life. We are constructing an eternal soul. And the material out of which you and I construct that are the choices that we make. And that's a matter of your soul and a matter of my soul. That's a matter that will end up in eternity. And you and I are constructing every day. We are constructing good or bad by the choices that we make, whether they're good or bad, deliberate or casual, the choices wise or foolish. And every time that you and I choose, we're building an eternal house, and it's going to last us forever. Now, the problem is, we little piggies sometimes make foolish choices, don't we? Anybody here ever made a foolish choice? Oh. Well, I'm going to have mass confession in just a moment. And if you've ever made a foolish choice, I'm going to ask you to raise your hand. But I'll run through a few categories first just to help jog your memory. If you've ever made a commitment that you wish you hadn't, if you've ever said something you wish later that you came to regret, if you've ever dated someone who was not a model of character, now don't look around this morning, but if you've ever done any of that, raise your hand. Oh my goodness, all right. If you've ever made a foolish choice about time, or about money, or about behavior or vocation, if you ever made a foolish choice about parenting or the stock market or spiritual life, raise your hand, would you? Oh my goodness, even more. Well, here's what I want you to do. I want you to turn to the person sitting closest to you and say to them, I am one foolish little piggy, all right? I am one foolish little piggy. My guess is the person sitting next to you knew that already, huh? We're all building a house. And the Bible tells us very clearly that God is interested in the house that you and I are building. Now, the metaphor that we use there is used a number of times in the Bible. Paul, writing to the church of Corinth, puts it like this. There are various kinds of materials that can be used to build on that foundation. Some use gold and silver and jewels, and some build with sticks and hay and even straw. There's going to come a time of testing at Christ's judgment day to see what kind of material each builder has used. Everyone's work will be put through the fire so that all can see whether or not it keeps its value and what was really accomplished. Then, every workman who has built on the foundation with the right material and whose work still stands will get his pay. What a day that's going to be. And folks, that's really going to happen. And if the house gets burned up, it will suffer great loss. You and I are responsible for our house, for our character, for our soul, and for our life, whether we like it or not. It is not optional in Jesus' story. Now, sometimes people do goofy things with their houses. Do you know there's actually a house that is located near San Jose, California, that is called the Winchester Mystery House? Anybody know anything about that? Winchester Mystery House. Well, apparently this belonged to Mrs. Winchester, and when you take a tour of that house, the guide will tell you all about its history. Apparently, her husband was the Winchester rifle guy. She was the heir to all of his money, and he died, and their child died. And when that happened, Mrs. Winchester turned to the occult. She developed a rather odd belief that as long as she kept building that house, death would somehow be confused, and death would not come for her, and she would be safe as long as they built the house. So she built this enormous house. People do that sometimes, you know. People get all wrapped up in their physical houses and they build monuments to themselves. And in that house, 16 carpenters worked every day, and they worked for 38 years in order to build that house. That house contains 2,000 doors. It contains 10,000 windows, more windows than the Empire State Building. The front door cost $3,000. Now remember, back in those days, way back there, $3,000 would build a grand, grand house. She spent all that money on the front doors, and they were only used one time. The workman who installed them walked out of them after installing them the only time the doors were used. You can go upstairs in that house, and there's stairways that lead up to the ceiling. And when you open the doors at the top of the stairs, it opens to a brick wall. You see, apparently part of the deal in building that strange house was she was hoping somehow she could confuse death. And she was still building that house when death came. And death was not confused. It took 8 trucks working 7 days a week for 6.5 weeks to haul away all the junk she had put into that house. And then the truck made one more trip, and this trip was for her. Because no matter what kind of house you build, and there's some very impressive houses in this part of the country, one day that truck is going to come for you. And it's going to come for me. And folks, that's a constant. We are all building houses, whether we want to or not, whether we build them well or build them badly, we are all house builders. But the second thing I want you to notice is this. Every house faces a storm. Every house faces a storm. You know, the wolf comes to every door of every little pig. We're all house builders, and we're all storm facers. Now, I want you to notice that if you read through Jesus' story, when you read the description of the two storms, you will find that the storm that came to the house on the rock and the house on the sand, it's identical, it's the same. Jesus wants to make it very clear to us, it is not about building a house where there will be no storms. The rain came down, the stream rose, the wind blew and beat against that house, Matthew 7:25 or 27. Now, I know this morning, you and I would rather this morning hear a story about two climates, about two different places, about maybe two different kinds of weather, like California or North Dakota in the middle of the wintertime. A wise man builds his house in California. Well, I know of a guy whose parents lived in Rockford, Illinois. He lived there most of his young life, and eventually he moved to Southern California to go to college. And he kept telling his parents that how great the weather was in Southern California and that they should move there because the sun always was shining in Southern California. So eventually they moved there. Anybody remember just a few short years ago how much rain they got in Southern California? Remember the awful mudslides that they had? Anybody remember there was a woman where a whole hill of mud slid down and she was trapped in her condo by the mud? The workers had to break through the walls of the condo to get her out. You see, that rescue effort and that wall was shown on CNN. That wall was the wall to the condo complex where this guy's parents had moved. That condo where his parents lived, the authorities had to red tag that thing because it was too dangerous to be in. The parents ended up in temporary housing, and they were not sure if they would ever get back to their house. And the whole thing was a mess because he told them in Southern California, the sun was always shining. Now, he did tell his parents there was no guarantee that if they stayed in Rockford, Illinois, a storm would not hit them in Rockford. Because you see, in Rockford, Illinois, there are two problems that you face. One problem if you live in Rockford is that a tornado might come along and huff and puff and blow your house down. The second problem if you live in Rockford is, even if a tornado doesn't come, you still live in Rockford, Illinois. My apologies to the Illini that are here, all right? Jesus doesn't tell the kind of story we would like for him to tell. This is not a story about how to find a place where storms never come. I know there are some people in this town and maybe even some people here this morning who are thinking to yourself right now, but Pastor Mike, you know, I'm smart enough. I'm rich enough. I have enough resources. I'm successful enough. I take care of myself. I can engineer a storm-free life. But Jesus says, no. No, you can't. In fact, this was his prediction. Jesus said in Matthew chapter 6, therefore, do not worry about tomorrow. And what was his next line? Do not worry about tomorrow because everything's going to be great. Or do not worry about tomorrow because the weather is going to be fine. Or do not worry about tomorrow because you can take care of yourself. No, he says, do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will bring enough worries of its own. Troubles today is trouble enough for today. And what is Jesus' prediction? Trouble today, trouble tomorrow. That's the world in which you and I live. I think about a friend of mine, great family, great kids. I've taken them now, all the family at various times on work and witness trips. Great home they had there in Mount Vernon. About a couple of years ago, he walked into his office in Mount Vernon and the company where he had spent all of his adult life working and found out that day the company was downsizing and he was out of a job. He's a really nice guy. He's a really bright guy, but he had a vocational storm that hit. I think about that group of guys who had gone to college together. There were eight of them that at one time or another had roomed together, and once a year some of them would meet together and kind of reminisce over days gone by, and one of the guys had not been there for a while, and he was asking the others about their family and asking about their children, and he was the last of the group of those guys to get married, and he and his wife had never had children. So one night around the campfire, they asked him, how did it all happen? He talked to them about how his dream had always been to be a dad. And then he explained for various reasons why that dream had died, and how sometimes he would wake up in the middle of the night and think to himself at those times, you know, I'm never going to hold my child. I'm never going to be a dad. That was his storm. John Ortberg tells of a time when he lived in Chicago in a cul-de-sac. There was another family lived right across from them in that cul-de-sac. Great family, just right over there. The husband of that family's name was Andy. Andy was a great kind of a guy. He was the sort of a guy that never met a stranger. He was sort of the glue of the neighborhood. Everybody liked Andy. And Andy was always working on his house. He was always doing some things. And every time he finished a product, he'd invite all the neighbors in. You know, he added a gazebo and invited all the neighbors in. He finished the floor of the house and had them all come in. Every time, all the neighbors came in. And then one day, an ambulance came to the cul-de-sac. It was Memorial Day, 6 o'clock in the morning, and they hauled Andy away on a stretcher. Well, John went over to take Andy's wife to the hospital. Andy was 43 years old. He wasn't in the best of shape, and they thought this might be a good time to have a wake-up call for him. And John thought, you know, I'll start taking him to the gym, and we'll work out together, and we'll get him back on the right track. And they were all sitting there when the doctor came out and said, "We're sorry. He didn't make it. He died. A heart attack at 43 years of age. A wife and two teenage kids. Father's Day is a real living thing for them these days. That's just the way life is. Storms come into every life. And I say that again this morning because I know in a world where we live in a world where people think, you know, I'm good enough, I'm bright enough, I'm religious enough, I come to church every Sunday, I pay my tithe, I go to Sunday school class, I can engineer a storm-free life. No, you can't, and neither can I. Everyone builds a house. You are building an eternal soul, and everyone faces a storm, maybe right now. And that reveals what really matters. Because, you see, what really matters in Jesus' story, the hinge point of the whole deal, really comes down to this. What are you building your life on? What are you constructing your life around? Because life is not about storm avoidance. It is not about making sure that circumstances are smooth and pleasant. That's why there's a rock and that's why there's sand. That's why you can build your house on a rock or the sand. And that leads me to a third observation, which is this. Everyone chooses the material for his or her house. Everyone chooses the material for his or her house. You have to build your life on something. You have to make somebody your authority. And Jesus says, if you do that with me, if you become my child, if you make me the Lord of your life, if you say, Jesus, whatever you say to me, I will seek to understand and obey that. And that's what I'm going to do with my time and my money and my relationships and my values. Then whatever storm hits you, you're built on a rock and you won't be slipping. But if you build your life on anything else, and you can build your life on other things, but if you build your life on anything else, you're building it on sand. And one day, as surely as I'm standing here this morning, a storm is going to come, and you may have a very impressive looking life, but it's going to blow away. It's going to blow away. Now, the obvious question when we hear the story that Jesus is telling us, the question we hear in this story of the guy who built his house on the sand, you know, he builds it there where he shouldn't have. The question is, how did he get into this mess? Why would somebody do something like that? It's very interesting to me that he did not set out to do something evil. Jesus did not say he was a wicked man. What's the adjective Jesus used to describe it? Foolish. Foolish. That's the human condition. Now, when our kids do something foolish, parents always ask the same question. We've done it for centuries, and I don't know why we have. It's a question that is designed to make sense out of the inexplicable, a search for meaning and rationality when it does not exist. It's a question of one word, three letters. And what is that question? Why? Why? Why did you do that? Why did you stick that spaghetti noodle up your brother's nose? Why did you leave your bicycle where you know the car would run over? Why did you do that? And kids always give the same answer, three words. I don't know. Of course they don't know. If they knew what they were doing, they would not have done such a stupid thing in the first place. Why? I don't know. But if you were to ask the foolish man, you foolish man, you have one and only one life. You know you're going to die. You know a storm is going to come into your life. Why in the world would you build your one and only life on the sand? What do you think he'd say? I don't know. Seemed like a good idea at the time. No architect would say, hey, here's some sand. Storm will wash away any house that's built on the sand, so let's build it here. It just happens. No one plans to live a mediocre life. It just happens. No couple getting married sit down one day and say to each other, you know, let's plan on ending up in divorce court. It just happens. No human being walks into a bar and says, you know, I think I'll become an alcoholic. It just happens. No man ever has a child and says to himself, you know, I think I'm going to get so busy and so wrapped up in my career and be gone from home so much that my children won't know me and they'll carry a hole in their heart as long as they live. Just happens. Nobody nurses a grudge and resentment, says to himself or herself, you know, I think I'm going to attempt to become a bitter, angry, resentful old person before I die. It just happens. Nobody sits down and plans on going to hell. It just happens. I don't know. So Jesus sets forth the choice. He sets it before us today again and again. We're all house builders and we're all storm facers. And he says to you and me, will you build your life on the rock? Will you say, all right, Jesus? It was Bob Munger who wrote at the end of one of his books, don't you get tired at some point where you're trying to clean up one mess after another after another? Don't you get to the point where you say, you know what, Jesus? Why don't you take control of my house? I'm going to sign it over to you. I want to have my house built on the rock. I want it to be your house. I want it to be your life. My question is, have you done that? Have you done that? You see, he will do it. He will do it. He says, those who love me will obey my teaching, and whoever hears my words will put them into practice. That's what it means to really love God. It means to do what God says. And then we have this wonderful promise, and we will come to him and make our home. You see, folks, it's not just your house and mine. It's our house with Him. If we give Him control. I don't know. Maybe there's a storm in your life today. I don't know. Maybe it's a job problem. Maybe it's a struggle in your marriage. Maybe it's a divorce that you've been through. Maybe you're wrestling with some deep emotions. Maybe an addiction or an illness. Maybe today you have a child or a grandchild that you love so very much that's going down the wrong path in life and you wish somehow you could fix it, but you can't. Maybe you've lost someone that you really love. Maybe someone has rejected you and your heart is bleeding. You see, a storm comes to everybody's life someday. And then the question becomes, what did you build your house on? And I would hate to think I came up to the end of my life, having built all my life around my job. Or even building all of my life around my family. Or just building my life around my bank account. Or my reputation, or whatever it is. Even as a pastor, to just have built my life just being a pastor of a church, thinking that was enough. And at the end of the day, walk away with a pocket full of sand. You see, you don't want to wait for the storm to come to decide what the foundation of your life is going to be. There's only one foundation. And our hope is built on nothing less than Jesus' blood and righteousness. I dare not trust the sweetest frame, but wholly lean on Jesus' name. On Christ the solid rock I stand. All other ground, regardless of what it is, all other ground is sinking sand. I want to build my life, my character. I want to build the house of my life around the solid rock, Christ Jesus, who alone makes all the difference in the world. Would you bow with me just for a moment? We are houses under construction, every one of us. God is trying to build into us the things that will last. He's trying to help us put down foundation that just won't fail when the storms of life come. And He asks us to make sure that the material out of which we build that house are the decisions that are right and godly and true. And I don't know the storm that you may be facing today, or the storm that you might face this week, or the one perhaps that you've just come through. But I do know there are storms. And I want us to make sure that our foundation is Christ and Christ alone. Father, simple little story, lots of truth. And it really is now time for Your Holy Spirit to search out our hearts, every one of us right where we are, in the choices we're making and the things we do. Not just hearing, but doing. Not just acknowledging, but obeying. making you the foundation of our life. Because out there when the storms come, whatever it is, whatever we face, we want to make sure that our hope is built on nothing less than you. So I pray today across this congregation, people that are so gracious and good as they listen Sunday after Sunday, that you will speak into hearts. You will help some decisions to be made that are decisions that are rock building, foundation building, that will last forever. To clear all the junk, to get ourselves off the sand, and settle ourselves on you. So that we might demonstrate to a world around us who's looking on when the storm hits, when they see us going through it, to know there's someone who's different because they've built their life on that which does not fail, Jesus and His Word. So touch us today and help us to have the foundation that is sure and steadfast. That foundation is you. And we thank you and pray your Spirit will go with us today and do His work in our hearts. For Jesus' sake.